There we are. Hello, this is Marcy Heim, the Artful Asker. Welcome to our February call on the Artful Asking Success Club. I am delighted and honored that you are taking the time to join me today. And I want to begin by having you all say, wherever you are, something good's going to happen to me. One, two, three. Something good's going to happen to me. Woo! Don't you feel better? Yeah, I do. That line by Joyce Meyer is something that I use as a quick pick-me-up. And I don't know how the rest of you are feeling, but in Wisconsin, we've been having rainy days, we've been having gray days, we've been having warmer days, but it amazes me how much sometimes this time of year, unless you're in sunny Arizona or Florida, can be a little tougher, can be a little gray to get through. And I use that line a lot. Something good's going to happen to me. It's a little quick me up. So I'd like to welcome all of you that are new members to our call this month. Just a reminder, little housekeeping here. I record each and every one of these calls, and provided I hit the right button, and they are available on my website to listen to you. I also want you to know, and maybe take a note, my team member Kathy, who can be reached at Kathy with a C, C-A-T-H-Y, at marcyheim.com, is the one who's working with the Artful Asking Success Club to be sure that all of our past recordings are in a place that you can get to them easily and all of that kind of thing. So we've had a few hiccups as we transition to different storage, but they should all be there now. And if you invest in a 12-pack of programs, not only do you have access to the ones we're doing right now, but you have access to my past recordings. And I'm a little stunned almost to realize that I've once a month since 2012. So there's a lot of really great stuff back there in the archive for you to listen to. I've tried to make this program inexpensive and relatively easy for you to gain some new insights and tools. So I want to start out by honoring you and thanking you for investing in your growth. If you're not growing, you're going down. There's really not standing still. There's no such thing as, I'm just going to stay right here where I'm comfortable and I'm safe. No, if you're not growing, you're going down. So think about expanding. And I hope that these programs help you expand. And it's interesting to me. I was thinking about this. I just got back from the Aldi conference in North Fork, Virginia. It was a fabulous conference. Great folks there. And the people there were really all about how they were going to grow and get better and better. And don't you sometimes find that the people who are at the conferences you're at or listening to the programs you're listening to are the people that are already kind of doing a really good job? Well, part of the reason they're doing a really good job or having a good life is because they're constantly investing their time in things that help them grow and expand. This isn't an accident, folks. This is a real intentional kind of thing that's happening. And don't we sometimes think when we're at a conference or on the program today, boy, do I wish Joe or Pete or Sally or Harry or Susie was on this call. Well, they're not because they don't think they need it, right? Yikes. Hiccup. Oops. So you really care. You care about your missions, your donors, your life, your families, and making this world a better place. And I thank you for that. And it's what led me to do this program this year. It's a year-long special program. I call it Dial Down the Drama and Dial Up Your Success in raising support and raising money and also in your life. Let me just mention a few topics that are coming up, and I'm changing next month. There's so much stuff that's going on around money that next month's call is going to be around my relationship with money, having it, asking for it, wanting it, resenting it. going to be a great call. So join me next month in March, always the third Tuesday of the month, 9 a.m., 10 Central Time. So we've talked about setting intentions. Today we create rapport. Some other things that are coming up are leaving a legacy, dealing with big problems, creating white space in your life, taking responsibility, those kinds of topics and more. Got the whole year planned out. You see, I believe we spend, and I certainly do, a precious time and precious energy engaged in emotions that don't serve us. In fact, they drain us. I had an episode Saturday morning. At the end of 2 hours, I went, oh, my goodness. I had to make a switch in some team members, and I got all wrapped up around it. I lost my focus on what I was doing, my clarity, and got caught up in the drama. And at the end of those 2 hours, I was tired, and I'd lost 2 hours. That's all I got out of it. That rarely happens to me anymore, rarely happens to me, because I've worked on this so hard. But that's that precious time and energy I want us to capture and not lose. How many times have we wasted precious moments lamenting about what might happen if I don't meet my totals, that major gift might doesn't come in, my kids get into drugs? I mean, all of these ifs that will probably never happen, but we focus on them anyway. And to be truthful, sometimes if there's something we dread doing, when we finally deal with it, don't we often say, well, that wasn't such a big deal. Why did I put that off all this time? That's what I'm hoping this series will help you with. What if it were possible to have the outcomes we want and enjoy life at the same time? So the point here is we use the word and, not or. It's a very important difference. So instead of what if it were possible to have outcomes or have a joyful and happy life? No. What if it's possible to have the outcomes we want and have a joyful and happy life? And. At the core, my friends, of everything we do, raise money, be a solid partner in our relationship, perhaps a parent, participate in the day-to-day fabric of planet Earth, there are ideas you can embrace that will make your journey even better and brighter, yielding more of what you want and less of what you don't want. And that's what I want for you. And I purposely use a dial because I want you to visualize some kind of a dial where you literally can put your hand on it and go to low, medium, high, go to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever works for you. But I want you to see your hand on that dial, and I want you to take in the power that you turn the dial. You turn it up, you turn it down. You turn it up, you turn it down. You control the dial. So when you're in a situation where you're feeling, first breathe, always breathe, but then see that dial and decide, are you going to let it go up? No. Are you going to keep it where it is? You control the dial. So last time we talked about getting clear, setting intentions. It's so important to set those intentions. What do we want our lives to look like at the end of this year? Intentions are way out there. They're different than goals in that you're intending for these things to happen and you're on a journey to get there. Goals are good, and they're good to have in the meantime, but what's so much more important about an intention is the person you become on your way to making that intention happen. So you see, the journey is more important than just checking it off the list. Great for day-to-day kind of work, great for quarterly goals and all that, but in the long run, your intentions are all about who are you becoming each and every day on your way to that intention. Today I want to talk about something I think is so important, building rapport. Why is it important? Well, bluntly, rapport is power. With rapport, you get a sense of being part of a family, part of a team. People will do more for those they care about than themselves. Is that not true? You will reach out to do something for someone you really care about and put sometimes, oftentimes, maybe too many times, your own needs aside because you want to help that person you have rapport with. It's a tool to help dial down the drama in your own life and with others. With rapport, you can get things done you can't get done any other way. I'm talking about with all people in your life, not just your donors, not just your colleagues, your family, your friends, total strangers. There are folks from your kids to your mega donors who can help you accomplish something if you can just connect with them. It's a skill set that will help you get connected in a matter of minutes, and I've got a wonderful story I want to tell you. So I told you this last week, I was just out to the Aldi conference at North Fork, Virginia. My flight left at 5:55 a.m. Oh, boy! So I'm up at 3:30 in the morning. I'm out to the airport. I come up to the ticket agent, and I never sleep that well, so I'm kind of tired. And I walked up to her. She was a beautiful African-American woman, and I smiled at her, and I looked at her, and I said, "You are just beautiful this morning." But I smiled. I paused. I waited till she met my eyes, and then I looked at her and said, "You're just beautiful this morning. That order is important." Now, it's really caring. She was, I meant it genuinely, no faking it. So she said to me, and I gave her my boarding pass and my driver's license and put my suitcase on the thing, and she said, "Oh, Ms. Heim, I'm sorry. Your flight is 2 hours delayed." And I went, "Oh, that will totally miss my connection, and I won't get to where I'm going anywhere near when I thought I'd be going." Oh, no, I didn't say, "Is there something you can do about this?" Oh, are you, I didn't let that drama dial up, but trust me, my friends, it was spinning just a little bit in my gut. And she looked and she said, "Well, oh, you've got a bag." And I said, "Why?" She said, "Well, there's a flight that would take you through Atlanta, but oh gosh, it leaves in 11 minutes. 11 minutes? Really? Now, Madison is a smaller airport, but not that small. And she said, "I'm afraid your bag." I said, "Well, I am TSA PreCheck." She said, "Oh, that'll help." I said, "I do have some big bottles in it, but the worst that'll happen is they'll throw them out and I don't care." And she said, "Well, let's try. Let me give a call up to the gate agent." And so she said, "You go get through security." So I ran, grab my bag, run down the hall, go up the escalator, get through TSA PreCheck. My bag is literally in the bin being checked when this ticket agent is running behind me, and she said, "Here's your boarding pass." And she gives them some kind of a sign that she's a ticket agent, so they let her in, of course. And just as my bag is in this thing, and she says, "Ms. Heim, here's your second boarding pass. I think you can get through. Okay, I think we can make this." Well, the TSA guy just says, "Here comes your bag." So out it comes. He could have cared less if I had big bottles. And at that point, I grab the bag. She runs with me down the hall. Of course, it's the farthest gate from the security, right? We get to the gate. Here is Amy. Amy says, "I've held the door for you, and you can get on board now." So the other gal is with me. So this is a true story. This just happened last Tuesday. So I hug, her name now I know is Raven. I ask her as we're running. I hug the gate agent. Her name is Amy. I ask her as we're hugging. I said, "Thank you ever so much." And I walk onto the plane. Now, people, talk about building rapport, and it has been maybe 7 minutes. And look what happened in my day. I left 10 minutes before I was supposed to leave at 5:45. I got to Norfolk earlier than I would have gotten there. And they gave me a nice seat. Now, I am not a platinum member on any airline, so this isn't because I'm, you know, first class or any of that. This was all about building rapport. All about building rapport in 11 minutes. From never seeing these people before to hugs and look what they've done for me. So just what is rapport? I always start by looking it up. Sometimes I'm really surprised when I Google a word about what it really means, and I realize I haven't always been using it right. But rapport is defined as a good sense of understanding and trust. If you have good rapport with your neighbors, they won't mind if you kick your ball onto their property every now and then. Versus, oh, honey, your ball, get in our backyard. Rapport is the close and harmonious relationship in which the people or groups concerned understand each other's feelings or ideas and communicate well. Okay? This is what I particularly love. Here are other words around rapport. Now, just listen to these. Accord, agreement, harmony, unity, bond, understanding, kinship, affinity, link, tie, sympathy. And I love this. Get this. A meeting of the minds. So when you're building rapport, you're making that emotional but almost brainwave kind of connection. Building rapport, my friends, is a fundamental skill that we all need for healthy, happy, and fulfilled lives. And it is a skill. So if it's a skill, it also means we can learn it. It doesn't mean you just were given the rapport gene or you weren't. It means that you can grow how you use rapport in your life and work relationships. Building rapport, I think, centers around a statement that I say almost every time I talk. People like themselves. Write that down. People like themselves or who they want to be. People like themselves or who they want to be. So rapport creates this feeling of commonality. When you have something in common, that's when the magic starts. That's when there's this spark. Right? So let me give you a few examples of what I'm talking about. People like themselves. Hey, you like football? So do I. Or you're in that conversation, you know what I'm talking about, friends. When this happens sort of accidentally and organically, oh, well, I'm a little sleepy today. I just got back from a trip in the Bahamas. The Bahamas? I've been to the Bahamas too. Where were you there? What did you like best? Right? There's that instant connection. Or somebody trips over the first step on an escalator, and you look up and you give them that kind of understanding smile and nod. No words are said, but you know, I've tripped on the escalator too. I get it, friend. Right? Now, let me give you an example of or who they want to be. I had a horrific habit of biting my nails and picking on my nails for years to the point where I would make my fingers bleed. I mean, seriously, this is not something I'm proud of. I'm kind of a transparent moment with Marcy. And my hands would literally bleed, and I'd have these big, you know, cuts on them where I picked the skin away from my fingers. And when I became more and more of a speaker, people would come up, and they would notice from the audience that my hands were bleeding. Oh, heavenly day. So I had to do something about this. I had to really address the fact that I have to keep them polished, I have to dump a lot of lotion on it, and I had to change a habit. We'll talk about habits on another call. But now I've mastered this, and I've mastered this for the last 3 years. My nails are beautiful now. I still really have to work on it, but they're great. So now I walk into a flight and I see a flight attendant, or I walk into a conference and I see another person and I notice these beautiful nails and I say to them, wow, great nails, beautiful. And now get that, I really mean it because I appreciate the work I've been through to have beautiful nails. And I know you just don't go abracadabra and they're beautiful. And sometimes they'll say, oh, thanks. You know, I love that new shellac. Or, oh, thanks. Isn't this a great color? I mean, this is not a massive exchange, people. But let me tell you, on a flight, it makes a difference of a flight attendant saying, if I ask for a can of cranberry cocktail, she'll say, oh, why don't you just keep the whole thing? Flashing those nails at me. You know, I exchanged this business about nails, and trust me, people, we are now bonded tighter than nail glue over that not even 2 second, 3 second exchange. That is rapport. So let's look at creating rapport as the artful asker. One of the things we kind of mess up around this, and I want you to be crystal clear on, is most people think that they build rapport by asking questions, and they get all around words. And by the time you get to the words, sure, it helps build rapport. Yes, it helps build rapport. Yep. It is part of it. But I want to be real clear on this. They don't work first. And by the time you get to words, you've often already missed a whole pile of other things that have happened. The pauses, the eye contact, the smile, the moment. That split-second time when you take the time to connect with another human being. That's where the rapport happens. Your words and your actions then either mess it up. How come this slide is late again? Or add to it. And I'd just as soon add to it. So I want you to think instead about matching and mirroring. Matching and mirroring. Why? Because they are totally outside our conscious mind. They tap into our subconscious mind. Let's look at pace and energy and gestures, and then we'll get around to volume and phrases and words. So there was a very famous medical doctor and hypnotherapist named Milton Erickson, and he had famous results with his clients in terms of change because he could get rapport with their subconscious mind. So now, your subconscious mind, just to get us all on the same page with this, that's the part of your brain that makes sure your heart keeps beating and that you're breathing. Now, just think if that was part of our conscious mind, something we had to manage. So I'm talking away on this call like, oh, forgot to tell my heart to beat. Oh, I'm dead. You know? Or, well, I'm busy working on this now. Oh, I forgot to breathe for the last 4 minutes. I forgot to tell my body, breathe now. Oh, I'm dead. Right? I mean, the subconscious mind does a really important function in our world. It keeps us alive. It keeps all of those things in our body that just have to happen running. That's what that subconscious mind does. Okay, it's in charge of things like our pulse, our breathing. So Dr. Erickson was a pro at creating rapport. Let me give you a couple examples. A patient could walk in with her head down, with her shoulders bent forward, downcast, looking defeated, and say, "Doctor, I've tried everything. No one can help me. Nothing will work for me. There's nothing that can be done." And he'd say, the second she walked in, first off, he's folded over, he's looking downcast, he's not smiling. All of these things happened first. Then his words, "Yes, I know. Why don't you just sit down anyway? It probably won't work, but just sit down anyway." Patient sits down thinking, "Yeah, it won't work, but I can just sit down anyway." Okay, same doctor, different patient. Versus, "Doctor, I've tried everything. No one can help me. Nothing, nothing will work for me. There is nothing that can be done." Now, Dr. Erickson has already straightened up, stood up tall and strong, and says loudly, "Sit down in that chair. We are going to do this, and we are going to do this now." And the patient thinks, "Wow, he's forceful. He's strong. He might just be able to do something." These were exactly the same words. The patients said the same words. That's tapping into their subconscious. I hope that helps you as an example, because Dr. Erickson is just such a leading expert on the whole idea of rapport. People like themselves or who they want to be. So Dr. Erickson mirrored parts of their energy and their voice. We judge in a matter of seconds. So what can we mirror in a voice? Let's talk about that now. Well, certainly the speed. If I talk so fast that you can't understand a word I'm saying, this call would be really difficult for you because you wouldn't have any idea what I just said. It'd be really hard to pick up the message. Or if I talked so slowly, you might wonder why you're on the call. I used to say about some of my older donors, that I would breathe before I went in the call, and I would slow down to meet their pace. And I knew that I could do it for about a half an hour to 45 minutes. And then I needed to get up and get out of there because that was a long time for me to contain my personality. But that pace was so vitally important to my ability to build rapport with those donors. So important. So let's talk a bit about volume. Loud people love talking loud with loud people. Try that again. Loud people love loud talking people. But quiet talking people think loud talking people are angry, harsh, rude. So our volume matters. In our work and development, I'm just going to insert another thing here, though. You also have to understand people's hearing levels. So there were definitely times when I spoke up and slowed down because I knew a person was having trouble hearing me. And they often don't want to tell you that. Now, intelligent people talk just like we do, right? Here's one you should probably avoid, accent. I don't ever try to mirror accent, and some people have tried that, and I think it's dangerous. Sometimes I'll do it in more of a joking fashion, I mean a respectful joking fashion. So you might hear me when I'm down working in the southern part of the country, of the United States, I might say, all right, all y'all, this is Marcy, and I'm all y'all here today to do this. And it's a fun yet respectful, and I might say something like, in Wisconsin, we say, you guys. So all y'all is really a much better alternative than what we use. But I don't try to mirror their accent. I don't do that. Using their words is important. And here, boy, we have trouble with this as development professionals because we want to correct them and we want to be sure they understand. So it's important to listen to their exact words as we talk about our projects and sacrifice perfection in how they're describing things for rapport building. So I'll give you two examples here. One, so I'm interested in giving a gift because I want, we're trying to teach our children. I want to teach our children about philanthropy, about giving. So I would say back to them several times in the conversation, and one of the things that's so important is trying to teach our children, giving our children an idea of how important giving is. And I've mentioned it several times, and I try to use their exact phrase if I could. I'd also use it in the follow-up letter. I'd use it in the follow-up letter as well. Another example, a lot of you have, whether it's scholarships or internships or whatever, you call these things something, or leadership grants or whatever you call things. Those are your words around it. So if I'm out talking with a donor and they say, well, I want to do one of those, you know, scholarships for that leadership program, I'm not going to say, oh, that's not a scholarship. That's a leadership fellowship. You know, and I've heard this. Again, all my stories are based on real life. I've been in the room and this has happened. So it's important to use their words. And then slowly over time, as you're helping them come to the point where you'll make that ask, then you say, you know, you're right, scholarship's a way to describe this, but we generally refer to what you're talking about investing in as a leadership fellowship. And they'll say, oh, fine. But when I'm first talking about it, when I'm building rapport, I don't correct them. I go with it. I call it what they call it. I use their words. So now let's talk about what actions we can mirror. Let's talk about what actions we can mirror. It's amazing how much simple posture makes a difference. If they are slouched a little bit, I can imitate that. By simply sitting up straight or by leaning forward, if I'm in a room full of people and you watch me, you will watch that as I turn from person to person, I imitate how they're standing. Are they standing up straight and tall with their head very erect? or are they more curled over? And I will imitate that instantly as I go from person to person when I'm in a large reception area. Instantly, to build rapport. Posture will get you so much farther than an entire bushel of words in terms of building rapport. All of this happens and I haven't said a thing to them. Okay? Your facial expression. We've talked about smiling. You know, whatever stupid look is on their face, give them that stupid look back. Gestures. I am a wild gestures. My hands fly all over the place. I knock over wine glasses. I run into things. I mean, I love waving my hands around. And in fact, people tease me that if they tied my hands down, I couldn't talk. But if someone else doesn't move their arms or hands, so can I. And I'm very conscious about doing it. I'm observant and I'm conscious. They make a gesture. They touch their hair. They clasp their hands. I do it back. Very easy. I mirror it back. Eye contact. Now, eye contact's the trickier one. Okay, because there are different feelings about eye contact in different cultures. And you may be aware of this, but you know, we're told to meet eye contact. Well, I get that. But again, I take my lead from my donor. If my donor stares me in the eye, I'll stare right back. You betcha I'm there. If my donor doesn't meet my eyes, but kind of looks on the side of me, I can kind of look on the side of them. I'll get some eye contact. I might ease into it during the course of our call or conversation, but I won't be like, I'm here, I'm staring into your eyes, and I'm not going to let you go. Stare. Stare. I mean, good heavens, that's actually a little intimidating. There's another thing I want to mention about this, and if you've ever been in my Making an Artful Ask session, I always talk about it there. Sometimes when we talk about things that are uncomfortable to us, we drop our eyes. We drop our eye contact. Notice I use the word drop. Picture now your prospective giver sitting across from you. You're looking at them, but then you drop your eyes, right? You're just reacting to your lack of comfort around something you're saying. But from their perspective, you're now either staring at their chest, maybe their middle that might be a little fatter than they want it to be, or their crotch. Now, let me tell you, that's not comfortable for the person on the other side. I've been there as I do more and more coaching around this. And you don't want to be looking at people's body parts. You're not even aware you're doing it. So it's okay if you break eye contact, but break it sideways, break it up, but don't let your eyes drop. Your donor there is sitting there saying, you know, I'm working on this weight, or gee, do I have a spot there? Once they go to why are you looking at me that way, you have totally lost them. They're no longer listening to you. Eye contact is very important. Touch. When I think about touch, so we're talking about actions we can mirror. We've talked about posture, facial expression, gestures, eye contact, and now we're on touch. Some people just about break my hand when they shake it. I do my best to crank theirs back. Again, meet what they have modeled for you. Match and mirror. Or if somebody is sort of fishy about it, I can be real fishy back. Respond in kind. Proximity. This one I struggle with a little bit because I am very comfortable. People can walk up and hug me. They can put their hand on my shoulder. They can put their arm around me. And I'm generally very comfortable with this. I'm a touchy, huggy kind of person. But there are some people, you just feel them. You just feel them tightening up. You are in their space. And I need to be really aware of this. So when I can feel, I mean, I can blow rapport if I mess this one up. I can blow it. Everything I've gained, I can blow if I get too excited about touching them. So notice it and make adjustments. So I bet some of you are thinking, wait a minute, Marcy, what are you saying here? They cross their legs, I cross my legs, they pick their nose, I pick my nose. I mean, what's going on here? I'm not saying that at all. I'm giving you a lot of different examples, but bottom line, you need to do one thing, just one thing, just one thing. The biggest thing you need to take home is that you need to do it right away. Don't wait to get to the words. As you meet somebody at the door, whatever, jump in right away. Now, some of you might also be thinking, boy, Marcy, you talk about being authentic. You talk about, you know, this seems pretty manipulative to me. I'm going to quote a gentleman by the name of Wayne Reschke. He was with, is with the Center for Organization Effectiveness and is somebody that I coached with for a time. Love the man. And he said this when we had a conversation around this. To adopt a personality style or trait is a show of respect for the individual. You are removing any barriers that your personality might create. You are minimizing any negative impacts of your personality. You are maximizing the opportunity to build sincere rapport. It is a show of respect. Thank you, Wayne. Now, there's a shortcut, and I'm going to spend just a little minute on this. I studied this with Tony Robbins, and he talks about the fact that we pick up rapport with our, you know, with our five senses: visual, hearing, touch, smell. What am I missing? Taste. So of those senses, most of us relate to each other visually or with touch or with hearing, kinesthetically or hearing, auditory. And all of us do all three. But when a person is professing a preference, you can begin to see their visual or auditory, and it will help you build rapport so much more quickly if you learn to kind of pick up on these. Which type are they? So a visual one generally talks louder, says things like, picture this, look at this, let's look at this. When someone's in more of an auditory state, there's kind of a rhythm to their voice, and they might say things like, listen to me, or this clicks for me, or let's talk about this. But it's all about things that are more auditory. And the more touchy-feely person tends to talk more slowly and might share things with you like, I need a more concrete example. I need a better sense of this. So they're struggling to kind of have that relationship, that sort of touchy-feely relationship with something. So success comes from trying to recognize these patterns. And there's even research, and we don't have time for this in our call today, but there's even research that says most people vote on these three factors. A visual, how does this person look? Are they handsome, ugly? What's their voice like? Do I like their voice quality? Is their voice quality kind of irritating? Is their voice quality, you know, something that you like or not? And how do they move you emotionally? How do they touch you? How do they touch you? You've got to kind of be able to work in all three. There was a series out called Back to the Future. It just was a huge hit. And if you've watched those movies, you'll see that they are really masters at using all three. There's sound, there's visual, lots of visual stuff going on, and there's lots of those touchy-feely kind of moments between the characters. Now I want to spend the last bit of time we have on our call today talking through three specific scenarios that come up in our fundraising and development work. It's a little challenging to do this verbally, but let me give it a whirl, and I hope it's helpful to you. I get a lot of questions about getting the first appointment. And I want to be crystal clear here. Getting the first face-to-face visit with someone is completely different than any other future appointment. You should only ever have to get the first appointment once. I hope you heard that. Because that means if you let the relationship lapse for so long that you feel like you're starting over, that's your big issue. You should only have to have a first appointment, a first visit once, and be in this awkward spot once. Then you should be building. So generally, if you're trying to get a first face-to-face visit. You're working with somebody who is not used to being asked for personal visits, at least by your organization or by you. So how do you build rapport? I still think that it's easier to build rapport on the phone if I've let them know I'm going to call. So I used to take batches of people that I wanted to start seeing face-to-face that I'd either pulled from analyzing the annual fund or fit into a specific project or department I was going to be working on, so I wanted to grow my prospects in that area. And I'd send out a letter to them, and my letter was very simple. Hello, Mrs. Fishman. This is Marcy Heim, and I'm writing to thank you for your support of our organization. We've helped more puppies, women, trees, whatever your cause is, because of you. In the next few days, I'll call to find a time when we can meet and I can get your thoughts on our new plans to do X. I share your love for puppies, trees, education, helping women in need, whatever your cause is, and it will be good to connect. Sincerely, Marcy. That's it. Very short, but I'm building rapport even with those words. Then I'm sure to call them. If I need to leave a message on a message machine, style is more important than substance initially. Now, you're going to laugh, but I listen. The only thing that really frustrates me is when somebody has a message machine that says, please leave a message. It's, you know, roto message. That is really frustrating for me. I like instead, for example, my message. Hi, this is Marcy. I'm so glad you called me. Create your day today, or whatever I say on my voicemail. I've got a voicemail that's all about me. It's got my energy in it. It's got my words in it. It's all about me. And people's answering machines say the same things. Their voice message already gives you a clue. Listen to that recording and mirror and match. Mirror and match. So mine, as I said, is over-the-top upbeat. When people start answers to me that say, Marcy, I love your message. That is so you. Then blah, 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 blah. I'm locked in. I already feel like, oh, I wonder who's calling me. This is fun. I'm glad I got this call. Then if somebody totally, like, ignores my message and then says, hello, Marcy, this is Joe Smith, and I'm calling to see if you can speak to us at the AFB, blah, 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 blah. And, I mean, it's okay. I'm still grateful to get the call, but I don't have the same rapport. Does that help? Do you understand? So say that this message is, you know, pretty, you know, it's pretty, hi, you've reached the Fishmans, and we're not here to take your call right now. Please leave us a message. So it's not fast. It's not slow. It's sort of normal. And I'd come back with, hello, Mrs. Fishman. This is Marcy Heim. My number is 608-238-4024. Did you get my note? Hope so. I'll be back in touch to find a time we can meet and I can get your thoughts on our new plan to do X at the XYZ organization. We're grateful to have you in our family. Thank you. Now, you might say, shouldn't I leave the number two or three or four times? What if they've missed it? Well, you know, to be honest, this first message I leave, I'm not entirely interested in having them call me back. I'm interested in leaving a message and having a chance to build another piece of rapport. I'm not really trying to call them to action with this. Now, if I get them in person, because I'm going to call them again. Okay, so I have the note, I have this message, everything is building rapport. So if they answer, hello, this is Marcy Heim calling for Mrs. Fishman. Ah, hello, Mrs. Fishman. We both care about puppies, women, trees, whatever. I'd like to get together to hear your thoughts on our new program X from at Organization X. I love the coffee shop on First Street. Have you been there? Would that be a good spot to connect next Wednesday or Thursday? Now, I didn't say, how are you today? Right? First off, I've not met them in person. So they don't think I care, and I don't wish them any ill, but I'm really about making this appointment. So when I'm setting up appointments, I really am much more about business. Let's get to it. I'm not crisp or rude about it, but you know, we both care about education. I'd like to get together to hear your thoughts on our new scholarship program for the ophthalmology department, because that's their interest. I've researched, I'd like to suggest a place. So I love the coffee shop on First Street, so I'm not inviting myself to their home, but they can also say, oh, let's just meet at the house. Oh, okay. And I give them a couple of specific times, next Wednesday or Thursday. Now, this is a little different challenge if you're flying somewhere and you're trying to set up a trip. Then, of course, it's, you know, I hate that. I'll be in your area. A lot of times I'll say, you know, I'll be in San Francisco and blah, blah. So it's a little bit different. So here are some tips I have. You know, don't say, how are you today? Don't say it. Because first off, to them, it just feels like an obligatory, how are you today? And even if you do care, they don't think you care, and they're probably going to just say something like, fine, and want to hang up, or I'm fine. So how are you doing? How are you today? Isn't that great weather? I mean, just drop all of that. If they are busy at the time you suggest, don't press for another time. I, a lot of times, will say, okay, I promise to call back in 2 weeks and see if that's a better time. I get off the phone, and I promise instead to call them back. I have found this to be very effective because one of my favorite phrases is, I promise to. Now, it's a dangerous phrase because there is nothing more powerful and beautiful and rapport building and love building, personally or professionally, than keeping your promises. And there is nothing more heartbreaking, disappointing, angering, frustrating than breaking your promises. So I say, use the word realizing its power. Okay? So, you know, don't say to your kids, I promise we'll go out Friday night to a movie, and then say, oh, man, I've got so much work, can't do it. Son, sorry. Those are the things that leave permanent scars. Really important. A powerful word. Use it, understanding its power. So I'm organized. I'm making these calls. And if I say, okay, I promise I'll call back in 2 weeks, I know I've got the time blocked off on my calendar. I've got the names and the numbers and what's going on, and I will be back in 2 weeks. Okay? So it's important. That's a good tip, okay? Once you have the appointment, shut up and get off the phone. Once you've got the appointment, shut up and be quiet and get off the phone. So many of us will say, oh, well, and, you know, I wondered how you blah, 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 and we start yapping at them on the phone. You've got the appointment. That was the purpose of the call. Say, I can't wait to see you. Looking forward to it. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now. Bye. 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 Or I'll send you a note to confirm that we're meeting. Thank you. Bye. 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 Get off the phone. This sounds good. I'll see you then. Can't wait. Okay. Send a note or email confirmation. And then when don't have a rambling agenda on the phone. You know, get to the point, get the appointment, and get off. Sometimes if it's a new person and you know a mutual person, so maybe this is somebody the executive director worked with and you're now the development officer and you want to begin a relationship. So you can say, hello, this is Marcy Heim, and I bring greetings from Jim, our executive director. He asked me to say hello. And then you go into your call. Be clear, be concise. Again, use their words back to them. Of course, mirror their voice speed and volume. If somebody says to me, well, it's really been a hectic time right now, and I'm not sure, I will jump right in there. Well, I was thinking about the coffee shop around the corner next Wednesday or Thursday. How will that work? Or if they say, oh, well, I'm not sure here, I would say, oh, well, I was thinking the coffee shop next Wednesday or Thursday. I'm very aware of what people are saying, doing, and how they're saying and doing it. Agree with them when you can. I agree. This is an important time for us, or this is an important project for us. Look for things to mirror or have in common with your words beyond your organization. So, I can't make Thursday. Our daughter has hockey practice. Me, really? My friend's daughter plays hockey too. It's fascinating to watch. Would Friday work instead? So I've built rapport, but gotten right back to the topic. I haven't gone into a 30-minute conversation about girls playing hockey. Okay? The second scenario, so that's getting the appointment. The second scenario is your first visit. Where am I for time? Okay, I've got to pick this up. First and foremost, be polite. Be fun. Be somebody that's likable. Sometimes we're so wrapped up in the business of getting our work done that we forget to just be human beings. The second they open their door, adopt their pace, their eye contact, mirror one thing. Mirror one thing. The fist shake. The boisterous. You are boisterous. During that call, it's so key to talk to them about their thoughts, their advice, their input, to really have that whole first visit be around, what do you think? It's, I think, one of those first calls is an 80-20 call at best. You talk 20% of the time, they talk 80. And if you're going in with your list of everything you're going to ask them to qualify them, not only will you not be fun, but over the long haul, you're going to fail. I really like to see that first visit as simply rapport building. And any information you glean around it in terms of capacity and interest, great. You'll get a lot about interest. So you want to ask them questions around understanding their personal needs. What led you in the past to give to the organizations you support? Have you, if they're an older person, have you thought about your estate plan? Does it do everything you want it to do for you? Do you have any thoughts on how you would like to see a gift to our organization used? Even if you haven't even begun to talk about a gift yet, it's an insight. How would they see a gift used? A lot of times during the first call, I want to show that I'm interested in being crystal clear with them. So I'll say things like, let me see if I have this straight, and I'll say their words back to them. Or you're saying that, and I'll say their words back to them. I want them to like me, so I want to be supportive, and I want to be encouraging. That seems to be important to you. That's a really good point, or that's a really good question, or that's a really good comment. Thank you. And when all else fails and you're sitting there and you don't know what to say, my three favorite words are tell me about. Because tell me about will get you out of any, you can look around and say, tell me about this rug, it's lovely. Tell me about the picture on the wall. Tell me about your family. I mean, tell me about will not be a question, so you're not interrogating them, but it will lead the conversation if there's been a lapse. Be interested without interrogating. I truly had a colleague that would just, all right, kids, stocks, I mean, she literally interrogated, had her pen out, her little pad out, and she was there to get the information. And it was a disaster. We ended up letting her go from the organization. And again, remember to model one gesture, cross your hands, touch your elbow, cross your legs. Lean forward. You know, one gesture. This isn't a game. This is one gesture to build some rapport. And then building rapport also means, and this is really important, my friends, it goes as far as you get to make the connection, then stop. I mentioned that before when I talked about the girls playing hockey. So in other words, the house is a little bit of a mess today. We just got back from a trip to Budapest. And I would say, oh, I just got back from Budapest. My husband and I went for our 25th wedding anniversary. What a great place. What was your favorite part? Okay? So the whole part of my trip just got said. Now it's all about how they enjoyed it. I don't go off, oh, yeah, and then my husband and I went to this, and then we did that, and then we did this, and then we ate here, and then we did this, and they gave us free wine for our anniversary, and then blah, 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 blah. No, it's not about me. So I've built the rapport by saying, yep, I've also been to Budapest. That's where it stops, from my input. Then it's not about me anymore. It's back to the donor. So go as far as establishing the rapport, then shut up, then be quiet. Sorry. And just a reminder, again, to model their words and don't correct them on this first call. Don't worry about they're not talking about your organization or a piece of it with exactly the right words. Let them talk. Over the course of developing a long-term major gift relationship, you'll straighten out all those things. So the third one I want to talk about in the time we have left is a long-term relationship visit. So this is somebody you know a long time. This goes without saying, but still be polite. When I know somebody for a long time, sometimes I let my guard down. And instead of being polite and positive, it'll be, oh, man, the flights out here were just killers. They were just killers. I'm not going to complain to my prospective givers or givers. I'm not going to complain. It's just not part of the conversation. And sometimes when I know them well, I will let my guard down. Sometimes when I know them well, they will call me on it. So in other words, someone will walk in and say, whoa, Marcy, you look beat. How are your flights? And they just zero right into me. Ooh. Yeah, a little rough, but I'm happy to be here with you. The second they open the door, I still adopt their pace, eye contact, mirror one thing. I still remember their fish shake or their boisterous. Then I get to the questions. And I like to always begin with my long-term donors. I always want to say, hey, can we start by catching up a little bit? How are things with the family? How are you doing? It's been a while since we got to talk. Is Susan still playing hockey? And then react appropriately. But again, it's not your job to lengthen the story with your own. It's your job to go just far enough to build rapport. I also, when I have long-term donors, they share more with me. So one might say, we just lost Rex. And you know Rex has been the family dog forever. Now, I will tear up over losing Rex because that's how I'm wired. It's okay. You can get emotional with them. But don't try to fix things for them. You know what? I really think you should get another dog. You're not their psychotherapist. You're not their coach. You are their fundraiser. So just say, I love dogs too. I understand. I'm sorry. Not a long story about your dog. That's where we kind of mess up. And sometimes, in fact, I use this quite a bit. I would be very clear that I was making a shift from our personal relationship to our professional relationship. Because you know what? Donors want to know that you like them for more than their money. You're not just talking to me today because I have a lot of money and you want it. You're talking to me today because you and I have a relationship. And we know about each other, and we've worked together, some of my donors, for 25 years. I know these people. I've watched their kids go up. I've been around when their parents died, been around when their kids got married. We have a relationship. And I don't want to be professional to the point where it feels like the relationship is situational. The only reason I have a relationship with you is you have money that I want. Now, how crappy would that make your donors feel? How inauthentic is that? Okay, so I will say something like, Gladys, I need to put my Badger hat on now and talk about how you're feeling about this project we're doing at the university. Can we get to that now? I will purposely say, I'm shifting to business now. This is my friendship with you. Now I'm Marcy, your development professional. John, there's some things we need to talk about today regarding your giving to the university. Let's get going on that. You know, I know we only have till 10 o'clock, John. I need to shift us now to talk about your... And I purposely make a shift, and then I become Marcy the professional. I sit up taller. I adopt a different attitude. I'm saying to them, now I've shifted from Marcy, your friend, to Marcy, your development professional. And people appreciate it. Oh, yeah, let's get down to business. That's right. We've got to talk about that. That is why you're here. And I'll always correct that. Well, yeah, that's why I'm here, but I'm also here to see you. I mean, I always reinforce the fact that I like you, not just because you have money. Think about being on the other side of that. Okay. With all of these things, remember, you should never have a first visit again. At every single visit, you must always, always, always set up the next touch, even if it's a long ways away. So this is February. This is somebody that is a long ways off. You don't see them often. But you always get in touch with them before the fall football season. I don't know, whatever. So, John, it's been great seeing you today. Now, remember, I'll be in touch in the fall before we kick off that fall football season. Go Badgers. I promise you'll hear from me then. And I follow up with my promise. So it's never awkward when I call, John, hi, this is Marcy. Can you believe it's fall? Here we are looking at another football season. How are you, John? I have such instant and wonderful rapport. I never get the feeling that somebody is, oh, here's Marcy. She wants money again. And it's not like I'm talking to them every other week. Now, in my relationship action plans, something has happened with them, but it's not necessarily me doing it, and it's not in person. It's about the rapport. So you will go so much farther with good rapport than grinding away trying to get the facts out and convincing them they want to make a gift. So from today's call, I want you to remember a few things. One is that rapport is not manipulative. It's a sign of respect, that you want nothing in your personality or actions to put up walls between you and the bonds you're trying to build with your donors. That the second thing is rapport starts before you ever say a word, all those nonverbal things. And the third thing, something good is going to happen to me. So I hope you've enjoyed this second episode in our series, Dial Down the Drama, Dial Up Your Success. On the Artful Asking Success Club, this is Marcy Heim saying have a great week, have a great life, enjoy the opportunity we have each and every day to create our lives, and once again, something good's going to happen to me. Thanks so much for being on the call today. Bye-bye, man. Bye-bye now.